Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is your good friend, Patrick O'Dowd, welcoming you in to another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, brought to you as a part of the ChairShot Radio Network here on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And gentlemen, that's right, I say gentlemen, we have a full bandwagon today back from a two-week hiatus, the master of villain madness.
That's all
we're working on. Not violating the Spotify. Yeah, don't piss off Spotify.
That was it.
But
that was
Let's welcome back to the podcast after a two-week vacay, the Reverend himself, Raymond S. Cashington Esquire, the 8,376,294th.
We were pretty busy. Yeah.
Oh, the audience is happy to see you.
We were pretty busy, I guess, while I was gone, huh? I mean, we the 8 were. Millions and whatnot. No, it's good to be back,
well,
man.
Well, usually you're in the 9 million, so.
Oh, so I lost some of my progeny. Good to know.
Just a different timeline. Just a different multiverse, bro.
Well, we'll get into that, I'm sure.
You guys were pruned.
Maybe Kid Rock's right. It is all these ugly liberal women and our population is in decline.
Wow.
Okay. Oh, my God. I just thought it fit in.
That's PC Tony, everybody. Mr. Saturday Night, the Executive Vice President of Talent Acquisition and Wednesday Programming. I'm just going to say Wednesday programming because like it's 3 weeks of no Greg DeMarco show started this past week. So
that's okay. Very, very, very hard callus is built up on me. I'm used to it. Listen, I'm not saying I agree with Bob or not, but I thought it was funny. You know, there you go.
Gotcha. Well, the other voice you did hear is my partner in crime, the other OG member of the bandwagon here since day one, the lawyer himself, David Ungar.
Yep. Welcome in, everybody. Glad to be here for Bandwagon Nerds. Got some fun stuff to talk about. That's for sure.
Dude, we have a loaded show. We have a lot of casting news to talk about today. We've got a small trailer park, but an important trailer park. Two big trailers dropping this week. One from Marvel, one from DC. Can't wait for Ray to shit all over one of those trailers. But you know,
guess which one?
I mean, that's why we do the show. You can throw it out there, and I'm excited for the show. It's a news loaded show. So Tunny. Oh, and Dave and I are gonna you're gonna have a little bit of story time with your grandpa Dave and your uncle Patrick, because we're gonna talk a little Andor today. And I think Ray, you didn't watch Andor, did you?
Oh no, but I and it's not that I don't want to. I didn't watch all of the first season, so I have to go ahead and binge all of it. So now that it's over, I can actually do that.
Cool.
By the way,
so we are.
I'm sorry. Did y'all talk the Peacemaker trailer last week?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure, because I know that was the one thing that wasn't on the trailer park.
I mean, it was. It was on last week's, but nobody saw it because nobody saw the rundown, because Pat didn't send the rundown. He thought he did.
Oh.
He made an email. He looked at it and then started talking to Dave during our recording of Four Quarters about how excited he was going to be talking about other stuff, and then it wasn't there. And it's like, whoopsies. And then as we're getting ready for the show, Tony's like, do we have trailers? Like, what are we doing? And I'm like, oh, geez, that explains it. So anyway, we do have a trailer park today. I did send it this morning. None of you said you didn't get it. So Tony, these are two consequential trailers. They are, one felt pretty epic in nature. I feel like it deserves some consequential banjo. I don't know what number that is, but play us some consequential banjo today.
Sequential? Good God. That's
consequential banjo. I feel the consequences. I feel like that's sufficient. I feel like that is a sufficiently consequential banjo tune.
Does that remind you of the Fire and Flame song from Guitar Hero?
Dragon Force?
Just banjo version? Yeah.
I never played Guitar Hero.
Really? Wow. No. Talk about the most impossible song to try and play at the end of that damn thing.
Yes.
I did a little dabbling in Rock Band. Back in the day,
I don't think they've ever put it on Rock. I mean, it was like the post credit.
Well, because you have to have Guitar Hero, because you have singers, right?
Yeah.
My favorite. Band, go ahead, Ray.
In Rock Band, the whole point of it was all of the instruments. Eventually, Guitar Hero had singers too, but they never had drums. But Rock Band had the drums. But the Dragon right. Force song, you beat the game, and then that's the final song to end the game. But the game is over at that point. You just can't get to the credits or to the get out of it until you finish that.
And the fact that somebody plays that song for real in the real
on a
world,
regular basis,
they're unbelievable band, man.
Rock Band was great because you could have multiple people. Guitar Hero was fun doing it by yourself, trying to beat everything. My favorite story from this, though, is Slash's kid was playing Guitar Hero, and Slash was like, "How hard can this be?" Well, and he couldn't do it. And he looked at his kid and goes, "You realize this isn't how a guitar works?" And his kid goes, "Excuses!" And he took the guitar back and started beating his ass.
Guitar Hero did that world tour where they tried to implement all the instruments and stuff, but they couldn't compete with Rock Band.
It was funner the way they put it out the first way.
And all of this is instrumental in learning about Riri Williams and the upcoming series Ironheart.
Nothing to do with it.
It's in the trailer.
The trailer dropped this week. I know, Ray, in particular, you have been chomping at the bit for this trailer to come. I got to say, it looks a lot of fun. And already, Little O'Dowd approved. Little O'Dowd, I had to watch both trailers today. And, Ray, you're going to love this, too. Kind of meh on the other trailer. But was like, this interesting. We watched the second one first, and then we watched Ironheart second, and he comes walking out. I was like, I want to watch that. I was like, cool, that's a series coming up on Disney Plus. I was like, what about the other one? He's like, I don't know. Like, yeah, I don't know. So that is where we are. Ray, I'm going to hand it over to you. Pontificate for us all. Preach to us, Reverend, on the joys of this Ironheart trailer.
Well, I want this to be a happy, fun, good conversation. So I want to start off with some negatives first to get it out the way. We do not have to talk about this. I'm only mentioning it because we are somewhat of a news show, but I'm continually pissed off at the people that want to troll the shit out of this show and this character for reasons that we don't need to get into. But I'm fucking angry.
Oh, you can't. They're racist. They're racist in review
bombing. Right, but yeah, I don't even know if I want to give them the credence of talking about them. But just
we don't have to talk about it, but we know that's a thing. Like, it's been a thing. Yeah, anytime, man, a character doesn't match a certain subset identity, even though the comic book character from her inception has been a black one.
And
like, that's not even in question. There's no gender changing.
No.
There's no race changing. Nothing. Nothing has happened here.
And it wasn't created to just basically change or gender bend the original character. They are as separate as ever can be.
Right. That's just people who don't know and we don't care about
it. We don't care. I am concerned. I already had some concerns about the show because of the obscurity of the character. Ms. Marvel is newer, but she was popular at a level that Riri never reached. I'm not saying Riri isn't popular, but Ms. Marvel was popular enough that the actual Marvel-approved Avengers game was built around her. So, like, there's a different level of it. I was concerned if people would be into it. I think her being in Wakanda Forever was a good shout to let people know the ideal of the character. So there are two things about the trailer that I didn't like. Other than that, cannot wait for this. Literally cannot wait for this. Number one is I don't like the idea that Riri is doing all these things for money. The character is horrifically aloof, the type of kid that'll work 3 days and forget that she ate. She never has ever thought about a dollar in her life. That was the whole point of her trying to build the Iron Heart suit in the first place, because she was like, I just got to find scraps. So for her to be doing things with the hood, who, by the way, Anthony Ramos is going to kill that role. I firmly believe it. But to get money, that's just not her as a character, but I get it. You got to make it work for the masses. The second thing, and this has been my issue since the first time we saw her, the Ironheart suit is not a bulky suit like War Machine. The Ironheart suit is almost sleeker than Tony's. It is extremely sleek. I don't want to say form-fitting because this isn't the type of thing, but like, you look at Tony's suits, any of them, and you look at all the other iron-esque suits, every single other one is bulky except for Pepper's, because Tony made it. But War Machines is bigger. The Ironmonger was clearly bigger. All of them are bigger. I'm not saying hers needs to be just like Tony's, but she's a little person, and she keeps making this extremely big, bulky suit. That's not what she does. Those are very, very small, nitpicky things. Everything else about the trailer? Money. Cash money. Steph Curry with the three. I'm so excited. I'm so happy for this opportunity to happen. And a lot of people complained about Marvel and these phase 4 and 5s because we didn't see where the connective tissue is. I'm looking forward to people seeing where the connective tissue for this is with the rest of the MCU proper. I'm looking forward to that, because I know that's going to be another conversation and complaint. So I'm looking forward to people seeing that, because we already killed a lot of that noise with most of the phase 4 and 5 with what's happened in the past couple movies and shows. I'm hoping that we can watch this and enjoy it for what it is, and then see where it fits so people don't complain about that connective tissue. Love it. Love it. I'm here for it 1,000,000%. You're muted, brother.
I unmuted my mic. It's unmuted. Every Zoom Teams call ever in unison. Tony, your thoughts on the Ironheart trailer. What do you got, buddy?
Looks great. Looks fun. Are we going towards the Young Avengers here? I mean, the connection is more with her and Kamala from comic book wise, the Champions, right? And then, but we've seen them use adjacent stories to, you know, bring this together. I think her bringing that tech side would be really cool. It fit in well. So I hope that's where they're going. 6-episode series here should be really fun. Should move fast. And I think it's smart. I think you can really pack a really big punch into every episode with 6 episodes. And I think that's really going to be key in getting people on board with this character.
Yeah. It looks really good. I think, like what Ray said, it's the connectivity that is where this one kind of is going to make or break. I think as far as how does this connect into what's going on, what we know is going to go on. I imagine Riri is going to be on Sam's team, because she's sure is not. I don't think she's going to be a part of the Thunderbolts / New Avengers. So you may see some of that going on, whether Sam's team is fully fleshed out or not. You're going to see how that team comes into being. I think pretty evident she's going to be a part of that. But it's also important to get that Iron Man-esque character. You know, the tech, we know how smart Riri is. Now we got a suit. So it's something that people can gravitate to, whether they're going to review bomb it for stupid reasons or not. It does give us that Iron Man-ish character that I think, you know, the new Avengers on whatever side of the fence you're on, we're going to need that.
Did Dominic Thorne's name show up in the casting chairs?
No, not the original one.
So I would pause on the speculation that she is one of Captain America's new Avengers.
To that point, Dave, and I know Patrick loves when I talk rumor and innuendo, but the initial rumor that so far, I know, right? The initial rumor from years ago that has so far seemed to come to fruition was that in these two movies, there were going to be multiple groups of teams. You're going to have like almost a street level team, like a Defenders level street team. You have your OG Avengers, Thunderbolts and all that. I don't think Riri's joining this because we already see Kamala is on the hunt to create her team.
Right.
And I think
she's Fury, already gone after Kate Bishop.
Exactly. And I think Fury is going to be rocking with the kids and not with Sam. I think Sam is really going to be on his own here with trying to find his guys, which we know Shang-Chi. Right.
And
Hulk,
that's another notable Captain name, Marvel, by the way, not dropped in a chair. So just to remind everyone, there's a couple names we haven't seen, a lot of names we haven't seen that people expected to see out of that big casting drop when they started talking about shooting and production. I, too, am looking forward to Anthony Ramos as the Hood. Marvel, do me a favor. Do me a favor, because you do yourself a disservice, and this is true for comic book movies in general. Don't kill the villain. Just don't. Like, we do that too many times. We unalive too many villains. But, you know, in a month, basically a month from now, June 24th, first episode's going to drop. I think we're going to cover it here on the Bandwagon Nerds podcast. I think that is going to be a conversation, a bullet on the old rundown whenever it reaches Tony's inbox, hopefully in time for him to eat his waffles and watch some coffee trailers. I don't know what he actually eats for breakfast. I'm just saying his waffles because I know he eats breakfast every
Sunday. Does anybody else
want to
guess?
Place.
Does anybody else want to guess what I go to?
Poached eggs and sauerkrauts.
I'm going to go with beer.
No, that's his lunch.
Just scrambled eggs, hash browns, and sausage links, guys. That's it.
Toss salad and scrambled eggs.
Wash it down. Oh. Wash it down with a cigarette, like Burgess Meredith and Grumpy Old Men.
Yeah, maybe I seem another a bit confused, but I got you pegged.
That's right, you do.
I frown upon.
Okay, let's turn it over to Dave. So I'm going to tell a story about Dave because this is one of the things I love about Dave. Dave, you even when you love something, you seem to have a problem with the things you love. Case in point, the Washington Capitals. Basically, any sports team that you cheer for. But also, I'm sitting here
fans,
and I'm,
isn't it?
I'm sitting here watching you in this little conversation as the newest Superman trailer and best, the one that got me more excited, Superman trailer to date. And I'm sitting there reading this one point, you're like, I'm worried they've shown too much. Dave, they haven't shown too much. James Gunn's smarter than that. You know that? Not
that they've shown too much, that there's just too much going on. That maybe there's...
No, you gotta... What was too much for you? What was too much?
Here's the thing is, I mean, there's two ways to look at this, right? You can draw the comparison. Spider-Man 3, which we all I think universally all of us said, there's too many villains in this one. That's why it didn't work out. Then you've got Avengers, which did everything right. You know, I look at this trailer and yeah, I absolutely love it. And I know Ray's writing on his whiteboard that it's trash and that's fine. So I love the trailer, but it's like, wow, okay, we've got at least three different villains going on here and at least three different heroes going on here. And is James biting off more than he should be chewing at this point in the whole thing? And I agree with you, Pat. James Gunn can manage that. We've seen him do that multiple times. I don't know, but I think, you know, there are so many elements of the trailer that were really, really well done. David Cornsweet's delivery when he's doing the interview with Lois, where she's like, Superman, he's like, when he says Miss Lane, it's like, okay, there's Clark Kent right there. That he nailed that really well. I think there's so many elements of it that looks good. You get a bigger reveal as to what's really going on. Why Superman is kind of out on the outs with a lot of people, because he's just being who he is, which is like, the fuck do I have to answer to the president or honor sovereignty of other nations? I'm out here stopping wars and doing good. And I know that line probably really pissed off Ray, but it's all right, because that's what he does. He does good. And I love the trailer. I feel a lot better about the movie. I'm a little bit leery. Like I said, okay, are we trying to do too much here? Because I've got BVS syndrome, you know, and what they tried to do with that. But I have a lot of faith in James Gunn. Trailer looks excellent. There's a lot in this to like and be hopeful about. And I yield to Ray to show me his whiteboard at this point.
Oh, I call this the board of Patrick.
Mess, I ho hum, blank face K. I got a blank face? Really?
No, you don't.
I mean, but I kind of do.
Those are all terms you would say. No, so let me be serious. The gimmick would behoove me to say trash and blah, blah, blah. In all seriousness, I like the trailer. I agree with Dave, much to your chagrin, Patrick. I do think it's a little bit too much, only because Superman is a big enough villain to be able to fight multiple people in a movie. But
you
like,
call him a villain? You called Superman a villain, Ray.
Oh, well, to me, it's.
That's
how big enough character.
I can't let you get away with that, buddy.
Big enough character to fight multiple villains in one movie. But when I watch a trailer, I can't speak for the three of you. When I watch a trailer, yes, the first one, the teaser or the first introduction, I want to set the scene of this movie. And the first trailer did that well. Eventually, I want to get an idea of what I'm coming to watch. And I don't have an idea of what I'm coming to watch yet, because I don't know if he's fighting Lex. I don't know if he's fighting Metallo or not Metallo, Metamorpho. I know he's fighting a kaiju in this movie. I know there's some other shit that he's fighting. Then there's, I thought she was Mercy Graves, but it's apparently some other lady that Lex created. Like, there's a lot of people out here for your boy.
Ultraman is in there, too.
Ultraman's in the thing. Like, there's a lot of people out here for your boy. So, like, I just think that could possibly be a little too much. In terms of the good things, from the very beginning, I have said, even as much as I hate this dude, the fact that Corin Sweat is so beautifully able to switch, almost code switch, between Clark and Superman. And we have not seen the guy do that well since your old school Chris Reeve. He is killing that. I love the way he's able to switch them and make them almost two different people so well that, like you said, Dave, in the conversation, you can see the body language and the voice switch. Love that. I love that we got a chance to finally see Max Lord's Justice League. We got that in Peacemaker, but you got to really see them here, Mr. Terrific. By the way, this is the year of Isabella Merced. She is murdering everything. Give her all her flowers.
But guys, hey, you know who's not in this movie? Florence Pugh's not in this movie. I don't know if you noticed that, but she's not in this movie.
I don't know,
you can't
bro.
Be sure
she's
about that.
I don't know. Right? I don't know. There's a big builder. She's going to fly off of it.
It might.
The idea that Superman is a man for the people is really pushed in this trailer. Because when he falls and the old buddy picks him up and helps him up, like, it's really pushed here. So I am interested to see. That's another villain. Him versus the modern populace, right? It ain't just him versus the villains. It's him versus society. It might be a bit too much for a dude who I've never seen him act before.
I have never seen so many people. You guys all are so pre-prepared. We have been so scarred. And I'm going to let Tony talk in a second. You two are really wearing some scars of some poor movies. Tony, you're saying no. Go ahead, bud. Chime in. Drop your mic. Let's hear your side. Before I respond, because I do have some comments on some of the things that people pointed out.
I really liked the trailer. I didn't think I was going to like it that much. I thought Corin Sweat looked great with the suit on. I thought aesthetically it was very pleasing. The passion of this Superman that's shown in this trailer is awesome. The story is Clark's ability to be himself and maintain his own standards, regardless of what people around him judge him. The interview with Lois, it exploits that perfectly, because he says, I wasn't trying to do anything but stop a war and help people. I'm not on anybody's side, but making my own decisions, because I think my own decisions are the most just and correct. And that's a really fun and interesting narrative to follow and watch him struggle with these things. Because, yeah, you know, Superman's life could be a lot easier. He could fuck some shit up around here in the entire world, and everybody would bow down to him in 5 seconds. And you'd have one of the many awesome animated DC movies where people are different than themselves, right? But I think this looks great. I think our worry about trying to fit too much in, I think Gunn's going to do it correctly to set up what he's trying to do down the road. I think he has a great playbook. He's a great play caller. He's proven that in the past. But I just can't tell you how pleased I was on how good Corn Sweat looked as in the suit. Just amazing. Can't wait. This is just, Thunderbolts is awesome. Fantastic Four is coming up. This, Happy Gilmore. God, what a fucking summer.
It'd be a great year for movies. Anyway, so here's some things that I've observed. I want to start with Metamorpho. Because you see Metamorpho, he is being held in a prison cell along with Clark Kent. He's being forced to make kryptonite. That's what he's being doing, because he turns into elements. He is a character that people are going to see and go nuts for. I don't think he's much more than that in this film. That is my argument. Two, I think a lot of the big action battle scenes we've seen, there seem to be two major ones that we know. One is taking place in a city, you know, involving that Justice League with the kaiju and all of that. I think that we've seen a lot of snippets from that scene that give the illusion that we're seeing more than we're actually seeing of the movie and of what's going on in the movie. The other big one that we've seen here and there is what I think is going to be a very brief scene of him interfering in an international conflict. My biggest concern, honestly, out of this trailer, that I walked away from this trailer, was the similarity between the narrative Ray brought up of governments and their opinions as to whether or not Superman should be like regulated or like what his role is, because that's very, and even the Lex Luthor moments that we get with Nicholas Holt, where he's talking about, it was eerily similar to Batman versus Superman in that sort of stuff. And if there's something that I've complained about, it's the same thing I complained about when I was talking about the Avengers. We just, you know, from Civil War all the way through until we got to a reconciliation and Endgame, was the event was good guys fighting amongst themselves. And feeling that that's a little recycled. Seeing this sort of track, while I need to see it, like that was just the big feeling that I got. What I absolutely loved about this trailer was that we got to hear characters actually be their characters. You know, you guys have talked about David Corn Sweat and him, but I think that you also have to really look at how great the brief seconds of Nicholas Holt and his speech, how just super awesome that was. You got to see Frank Grillo, who, again, I don't think is really a villain, because, you know, he's Rick Flagg and he's apparently the Secretary of Defense. He's doing what the Secretary of Defense would do. Rachel Brosnan getting to show that Lois Lane is a good reporter, that just because her boyfriend is Superman, because clearly they are together by that point, when she interviews him as Superman, which is the other thing that, you know, like there's no secret idea, there's no mystery on Lois's end. She knows who Clark is at some point in this film. That reveal happens. She goes after Superman the way a good reporter would. And that to me was the best thing about this trailer, is we got a good look at kind of the big three, the three that we need to care about: Luther, Lois, and Supes. We got to see a little bit more into who these characters are going to be in this movie and how it's going to impact them in the film. So one other thing that I got to say about this trailer, and then it'll be time for old man talk with Grandpa Dave and Uncle Patrick. The music so far, if this is the music for the movie, it's fucking amazing. Like, it's perfect so far. It is an homage to John Williams with a modern spin on it. And it evokes emotion when I watch it. Like, I get Christopher Reeve Superman chills because the music that Gunn has gone with these trailers, which means it's going to be in the movie, you hearken back to it, yet you know it's something different. And that's awesome. Awesome.
I'm glad you brought up the interview, because It's clear to me that he underestimated Lois's skill as a reporter, and she puts him in his place.
Oh, he's so dismissive of her. Yeah.
Calling her Cronkite. 100%. And she bitches him down pretty quick. So,
right. And so it was good stuff.
And you mentioned the connection to BVS with the government and all that stuff. I mean, it screams Civil War, too. The best hands are in our own.
Right. It's Man of Steel as well.
Right.
Right. I mean, the same thing happened in Man of Steel, where the government is trying to control him and he allows it up to a point, but it's still there.
Is that Walter Cronkite's introduction into the DCU?
Oh snap. The ultimate nullifier, AKA Walter Cronkite.
I mean, get out the hammer and chisel, go to the gravestone.
Regardless, July 11th can't get here. July is going to be a great month, with Fantastic Four and Superman both hitting theaters in consecutive weeks. That's going to be huge. It feels like superheroes might be back for at least 1 year. We'll have to see if they can keep that momentum. All right. So as we've been doing what you're watching segments, Dave and I have regularly been saying, oh, we're watching Andor and The Last of Us. We haven't really talked about it in detail on the show. And our good friend PC Tunney strongly suggested maybe we take a little time and just give our thoughts on Andor season two and what we've seen and what we've liked and disliked. And so we're going to do that. We're going to talk a little bit about this season. It's divided up into four chapters. I love that they did this and divided it up into four chapters the way it worked. And I'm going to start a little backwards, Dave, and we can kind of converse back and forth at wherever we want to go with this. We have both said, and I don't see much arguing against it, that Andor and now companioned with Rogue One is far and away the best Star Wars work that Disney has done, period. I don't think that there's anything better in the live action sphere for sure. And, you know, if you're a big dedicated to like Star Wars Rebels or some of those others, those animated series, okay, that's fine. The season finale of this, it made me cry. I was a mess at the end of season two of Andor, and then immediately watched Rogue One, like many people did, including Dave, and it just doubled down all over again as I'm watching it. This created so much context to Diego Luna's character and Cassian Andor's character that it was phenomenal. This is a phenomenal series. And we can talk a little bit about some of the controversies and stuff that people are carrying with it, specifically around Bix and her arc. There's been some squabbling about the way her story ended. There's a lot of people who clutched their pearls over the attempted sexual assault of Bix, to which my response has just been, I get that you like part of Star Wars' problem has been that it's been a little too saccharine clean and that it hasn't shown kind of the true seedy side of the Empire, or, you know, oppression, and that's what the Empire is supposed to be. And so you're supposed to be bothered by it, but I wasn't bothered by it to be like, this isn't Star Wars and never had any place here. I actually think it had a pretty big place here, but especially when you see how the story ends. So that's my initial thoughts on season two. This was just, it's terrific. The last three episodes, the wedding scene with Mon Mothma dancing, I still like a boss, knowing that somebody, you know, knowing somebody close to her is about to get assassinated, and seeing again how they weaved the formation of the rebellion through this character was everything I could have wanted in more.
The only thing that Disney has done that comes close to Andor is Mandalorian. I mean, that's the only thing I could think that comes close, and it's not.
But I can even say that Mandalorian, in my opinion, has faded after a strong first season, and it's not a bad show by any means.
Right.
But it's kind of faded since Luke Skywalker showed up.
It is, and they're different. They're very different shows. They really are. But Andor season two is, and I'll say this: when you take that, combine it with Rogue One, the only thing Star Wars that has ever done that is better than that is the original trilogy, and that's it. And nothing else that Star Wars has done comes close. Season two is just such a brilliant example of storytelling, and people who are complaining about it, you guys clearly don't understand Star Wars or anything that's going on if you're bitching about anything that's happening in this story, because you just don't get it. But yeah, the final season the way, like you said, they're mini binges. You know, it's just three episodes at a time where you can just mini binge this, go on to the next, take some time to digest what you just watched. It's the last 3 years before the Battle of Yavin. And yeah, man, like the last episode, just the very end, like you were saying, Pat, it's highly emotional. Just him walking with that suit on and the stuff being
and that's
in.
The trailer. What's so crazy is that scene of him walking through Yavin is the scene that they show in the trailer.
Yeah.
That leading up to this. And it's not just him walking. It's juxtaposed with all the characters that are still alive that you're following up to this play, you know, this point. You know, we lose Luthen in episode 10, but the way he goes out in never getting to see what he helped create, but that the people that he influenced and that fought for him will eventually lead to the, you know, the end of the empire. To see that foreshadowed, or not foreshadowed, to see that connective tissue built, like, it's awesome.
And Diego Luna saying that, go watch Rogue One right after the last episode, it's an entirely different movie, sounded like, kind of like, wait, we already know what happens in Rogue One.
Hyperbolic.
It did, but it wasn't, because when you go and watch that now, knowing what you know and how the last episode of Andor ends and the way that the Rogue One starts, okay, that scene has all sorts of different meaning now. And like the part in Rogue One where Jin is bitching at him about, you know, you're not willing to go the extra mile or sacrifice. And his response makes all of, is basically like, fuck you. You have no idea what I've been through. And now you get it. And
what other people have gone through. Yeah.
His tragic end is 10 times more tragic now, because you realize, wow, I've seen everything he's gone through. He and Ray, don't listen to this part if you don't want to be spoiled. But the fact that he never knows he has a kid, never finds out about that. And
sounds like Ray may have already known.
And like the stuff, the controversy about, like, people are actually, like, the conspiracy theorists out there. I know a few people said they thought Poe Dameron might be Cassian's son. He's not. But it does raise the specter. Well, what happens to that kid? What happens to Bix? So there's more story you can tell if you want to. Thanks, Tony.
I don't think I think that this is just what fans do. Like, fans need threads that they to, like, continue to talk about, because the other big one is like, whatever happened to Cassian's sister? Here's the secret, everybody. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because it's not his sister's story. And just like his son, whoever that child grows up to be, that's not the point. The point is that he's fighting for people he doesn't even know about, including his child. And they end on Bix holding their baby in the fields of that system where we started season 2. And it is a message that was carried in Rogue One and is carried in the original trilogy. It's hope. That is what, when Star Wars is good, or not even, when Star Wars is great, it's when it doesn't lose sight of the hope of overcoming tyranny and oppression. That's all it is. And that child represents hope. Her living a life, seemingly happy life, where she probably knew when she left him, she was never seeing him again. Because she knew that he was in so deep, he was never leaving the rebellion. Like, and he knew it deep down. He has an opportunity to go see her. Like, it's clear that Primo Tech knows where she is and doesn't go, and he chooses not to go. But she gets the chance. So
I think, like, the other character who really benefited, K2SO, from Cassian saving this Imperial assassin droid, and just, my God, how integral does he become? If it not for him,
fleshing out that character in the series too is just is great.
Saves Cassian's ass at least twice, at the end of Andor, and then in Rogue One. K2SO is the unsung hero of this whole thing, and it is just
he's the unsung hero of two episodes. Yeah, it's not like he's R2-D2 or anything. Let's not get it twisted.
Okay, but no, he's it is the magnus opus of Disney's Star Wars storytelling. There is no other way. It is by far and away the best thing that they have done on the Star Wars front ever. And you know, if you don't like it because it's not action packed the whole fucking time, then, you know, that's on you, because the storytelling is better than anything they've done since the original trilogy.
So I do want to ask one last sort of question. There's so many little things, little moments, Easter eggs, things that happen. Is there anything that really stood out to you that was a small thing that kind of, because there were two for me, whether it be a meaningful interaction, something you just saw, an Easter egg, anything like that, anything that just sort of made you a little giddy.
When he's walking through at the end, and you're, like you're saying, they're just juxtaposing all the various characters. And I don't even know if they ever gave us the name of the gal who heals him in that one episode, and can tell
the force healer,
tell that who he is, and you know what he's destined to do. That little nod of acknowledgement between them right at the end was really cool, because he nods at her and she's just looking at him like he's, you know, he's fulfilling his destiny. And I recognize that. And just, I think the big thing about this, and Tunney needs to listen to this because it's very important. There's not a Jedi to be found in anywhere in Andor, nowhere. There's no Jedi, and it doesn't fucking matter because they're not needed. They tell the story. And in fact, that the force is like this,
but the
marginal
but the
thing.
Force is there. Like
it's
that's there. That's the point.
But it's
of
not in your, it's not in your face. That's what I'm saying.
Right. And I will say this. Like that's one of the biggest problems with some of the later Star Wars stuff is that it. Like I get the Jedi are amazing and awesome and are a very important part of Star Wars lore. But there's so much else out there, and this very much is taking a different narrative. So there were, when I'm talking even smaller, more granular things, I do like the nod and the acknowledgement. I loved the conversation that Andor and Bell are going to have right before he leaves, when he's getting permission to go and meet up with his contact. And, you know, and Andor just looks, he's like, you and Luthen would have gotten along better than you think, was great. And I will say, I was a little concerned when I didn't see Jimmy Smits in the role anymore, that it was Benjamin Bratt, and all because of the dreaded scheduling conflict. But one little piece of tech that I thought was really cool, it was carried by, I'm going to forget how to say her name, the woman she rescues, Clea, right? Clea. She, when she's breaking into the nurse's lockers, and she uses that little device that looks an awful lot like a little R2 droid, mm-hmm. sort of unlocking device. Yeah. I was like, oh, look at her go.
Or how about,
I just thought it was cool.
Here's another moment I wanted. Deidre ends up on Narkeena 5. I mean, the ironic full circle moment there is like, yep, you deserve
that. Well, her drive and ambition leads to her downfall. It's the same thing that happens to Krennic in Rogue One. It happens to so many members of the Empire, and another big element of
Padagas going out on his, it's like the warden in Shawshank Redemption. You know, you are not taking this guy. It's not going to happen. And like the guy,
yeah, he was not going out
and they hear the blaster and he just looks at the guys like, no, it's okay. I mean, so it's like,
yeah, it's fine.
He let him do it.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up. We got a couple of other things we want to do, but we're going to take our first commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to start jumping into some news around the Nerdosphere. So stick around for all of that. Tons of casting news, and Warner Brothers Discovery continues to be a silly little company. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Why TheChairShot.com?
TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back into Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Make sure if you love what we're doing over here on this podcast, you head over to ProWrestlingTees.com/Chairshot and invest in one of the many delightful Chairshot shirt designs, including Bandwagon Nerds. We got a bunch of other great podcasts too. We keep ourselves going through the support of each and every one of you. And the best way you can do that is by buying a shirt. Look good. Spend $20. Spend a few dollars more. Get it soft style. Your giblets will appreciate it. All right, gentlemen, we are entering into some news around the nerdosphere. Tons of casting news. And we're going to start by sticking with sort of tangentially in the Star Wars universe. Because we learned this week that, so for those of you who don't know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, very, very popular show in the late 90s, early 2000s, starring Sarah Michelle Gellar. It's reboot season, and we are getting a Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot. Sarah Michelle Gellar has been announced as back. She's been very enthusiastic and excited about it. Well, we just announced a new Slayer that is going to be a part of this. And that is 15-year-old Ryan Kira Armstrong, who was last seen as the character Fern in Star Wars Skeleton Crew. Now, I admittedly did not watch Skeleton Crew, so I can't speak to how good or not good this will be. But I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I loved the show, Joss Whedon being a toolbox notwithstanding. Buffy and Angel, my wife, the Mrs. O'Dowd, actually is the one who got me into Buffy the Vampire Slayer, was a strong female heroine. She overcame so much, gave me a new appreciation for Sarah Michelle Gellar, even though I came to the party late. And I don't know anything about this actress. I actually just use this as an excuse to talk about the Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot and what I hope it is and what I hope it isn't. So if anybody has any comments or idea on who this actress is, great. But for me, this was such a fun action show with elements of horror. It had a sense of humor about it that was just sort of unique and quirky. I hope they get Allison Hannigan back. I don't know if Brendan Gleeson will be able to come back, or not Brendan Gleeson. Brendan, I can't remember his last name. He's had a lot of troubles, probably shouldn't be back. But we'll find out. And then Anthony Stewart Head, who many of you guys would recognize as Rupert from Ted Lasso, he played Buffy's like father figure. Brendan Nicholas is his name. Nicholas Brendan. Sorry, is his name. Anthony Stewart Head, he played Buffy's father figure, Giles, in a lot of this. He was Buffy's watcher. I hope that they get a lot of these people back for some portion of this show because they were all such a great part of it. But I'm surprisingly optimistic for a Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot. I'm going to turn it over to this panel. I don't know if any of you have watched these shows. If you haven't, there's a whole channel on Amazon that'll let you, it just streams it all day. You can just watch them one right after another. It's pretty cool. It tells you its level. Tony's face is already making that little twist that says he's a huge fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I'm not. It's very definitely, it's very cult classic, iconic in the genre, right? And kind of laid the path for things like True Blood and Twilight. You know, you could say stuff like that. I did catch the clip on social media where Sarah Michelle Gellar told the young actress that she was being cast.
Isn't it adorable?
I love the human interaction stuff like that. It gets to me every time, especially when you have someone established, you know, giving good news to someone who's obviously a fan as well. So for those of you who watched the original and are a fan of this genre, I'm sure that it'll do itself and its predecessor justice.
I'll jump in. So Buffy was just a little bit before my time. I was aware of it. It was on TV when I was watching, but I was just a little younger for it to be kind of my core people for me to watch. But I know that, number one, it was badass in that it was one of the first of its kind to promote women leads as badass and fighting and solving and not being damsels. Shout out to shows like that. The film Nikita, Alias, like shows like that at the time. So shout out to that. Sarah Michelle Gellar, fantastic actress. Little girl, I haven't seen Skeleton Crew. I don't think any of the four of us have. Dave did.
Some of it.
You've seen enough to know who she is. So I haven't seen that. But she was the little girl that starred in Firestarter.
Oh, really?
So I watched that movie, and that little girl could act. So she's very excited.
She's done more than a couple of reboots in her day, then. That's what that tells
me. She has, yeah, because I remember that was a little controversial when the new one came out. Well, we did it in the 80s. Well, the little girl was fired.
Like 40 years ago.
I mean, well, exactly.
Kids, for those of you mad about movies being remade from the 80s, that was 40 years ago. 40 years ago. People don't remember.
Clearly I didn't, because it was before my time. But right. The little girl killed the role. She was fired, pun intended. She's not only is she going to murder this in a good way, but quick 10-second tangent. There is a show on Netflix called Jenny in Georgia that me and my kids have been waiting for two years. It's been two seasons. The third season's been supposed to be going on for 2 years. When we found out the date, literally we've been counting down the days. Mind you, my kids are 19, 18, 17, and 14. This is the type of show that they'll be waiting on. Buffy's reboot. 2 years in advance. So good on them for casting the right person and bringing it back.
I was never the biggest Buffy fan. I knew about the show, but it wasn't anything I was that into. So I'm like, all right, that's cool. All I know about this, the actress that they've cast in this role. She can act. She's the most strong willed of the characters in Skeleton Crew, which is obviously very, very kid oriented. But I think she's got the most potential as being somebody like Buffy's. What is she? Like, she's another Slayer, like the successor to Buffy. Is that what she's going to be?
Well, so the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer series, which I think was really, really great television, because it really goes into the lore of the Slayer. So for those of you who don't know or didn't watch the show, is that basically in every generation, a girl is chosen to fight the forces of darkness, demons, vampires, werewolves, and she is known as the Slayer. And there is only one, and when a Slayer dies, another one is born. And in the final season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Buffy herself, after surviving longer than most Slayers ever do, then starts to question why there can be only one, and in the final episode of the season, unlocks the power of the Slayer within every girl that is a potential Slayer. And so there's literally Slayers running all over the world, according to the lore of the show. And it's a really awesome moment of the show, and is great to watch. But it's hard to know what that role. I feel like Buffy is going to be it's going to be a mentor role. She's going to be the watcher for this young Slayer. I hope they don't retcon the end of the series. I really don't. I hope they keep it, because they kind of continued the series in comic book form, and it was gathering a network of Slayers to combat evil and forces from hell throughout the world. Like, that's where they were in the comics.
Okay. I mean, if it's more continuation and less reboot, then okay. Could be cool.
Yeah, I'm excited for this series because I really enjoyed the original. It is one of those things, like, I love that I can pop on Amazon Prime now and just be like, oh, they're in the middle of season three. Let's watch this episode. And there's some great stories. The early season three is widely regarded by most fans of the series as the best series. That's the year that all the kids graduate from high school. But you know, I'm also partial to season seven, the final season, just because of the way they wrap it all up. Angel, by the way, the spinoff series, is in my opinion a better show.
That's Jessica Alba, right?
No, that's you're thinking of so Angel is a vampire played by Anthony Boreanaz. He's Buffy's love interest in the first three seasons. And after season three, he goes off to Los Angeles, where Charisma Carpenter's character also follows him from Buffy over to Angel. And then Eliza Dushku, who played an evil Slayer in season three, she starts making appearances here or there as a guest. She shows up in season seven of Buffy. She plays a prominent role in seasons one and two of Angel. It's a great show. I like them both very, very much. So I hope it's good. And I'm glad to see that the casting is encouraging from folks that have seen this young girl act. And hopefully we'll see more come along. All right, I'm going to do a little flip-flop on the agenda here. We'll save Warner Brothers Discovery for last because I want to talk about another casting thing, kind of keep casting news all in the same place. We also got an interesting photo from Amazon MGM Studios showing Nicolas Cage as John Madden and Christian Bale as Al Davis. And the film was going to follow Madden's remarkable journey from his Super Bowl winning partnership with Al Davis and the Raiders to creating a little franchise, a tiny franchise, and being one of the most, as they say, iconic voices in football history. Also in this film, David O. Russell is directing it. John Mulaney is starring as cast as Trip Hawkins. Catherine Hahn is playing Virginia Madden. And Sienna Miller is playing Carol Davis. Here's the thing. When I looked at this photo, like, I know we're excited about Nicolas Cage. We love us some Cage because he's a personality all on his own. But Christian Bale looks like Al Davis. Like, I was like, holy shit, he looks like Al Davis. And it reminds me very much of when they cast Barry Pepper to look like Roger Maris in the movie 61. How uncanny they made him look like the actual person. And you know Christian Bale's going to go full Al Davis.
So this is going to be a deep cut here, but you'll get what I'm going from. Did y'all ever watch the episode of South Park where they hated Family Guy and they found out that they were making they were getting the ideas for the episodes with the manatee picking random shit? That's what I feel like when they said, who's going to play Al Davis and John Madden? Christian Bale, of all people? And to your point, they looked the part. So, I mean, and I'm not trying to dismiss Madden, his contributions, or what a movie about John Madden could, because that man was had a million different aspects of his personality that could be interesting. I give you that. And you could have a trilogy of Al Davis movies if you really wanted to. But for Christian Bale to take this movie kind of tells me that we're looking for award season, because Christian Bale just don't take any movie. So right. I'm blown away at the cast. And then you talk about Catherine Hahn and Sienna Miller. Oh, fine ass Sienna Miller. Sorry. She's gorgeous to me. Like, dog, I need to see a trailer. Cause I remember highly questionable Poppy. See, very intrigued. Very intrigued. It's me right now.
All right. Tony, I think you shared this photo, man. I think you're the one who broke this one for us. And I think your quote was more Nick Cage. So I think you're excited about the casting, but what else you got for us on our preview here?
It looks fun. You think about the storyline they can tell. You know, you got the success of this real kind of big, unassuming gentleman as a head coach who doesn't fly and rides around the country on a bus. And Al Davis and the ongoing struggle he's had with the league. Pete Rozelle. Just win, baby, the type of offense he likes to have. So you can have a real interesting dichotomy on what kind of story you want to tell here between the two of them. The casting looks great. These guys look great as both characters. And like you said, Christian Bale really pulls it off. The other Nick Cage thing was the Spider-Man noir kind of stuff, too. It looked really cool.
Yes.
It's Nick Cage season, bitches.
It is Nick Cage season. Dave, are you a fan of Nick Cage season?
Oh, Nicolas Cage, of course. Yeah, absolutely. You can't have too much Nick Cage. Well, you can, but this isn't one of those situations where you can. So he looks the part, like you guys are saying, Christian Bale looks amazingly close to Al Davis. I guess the story starts after the Raiders win the Super Bowl 11, and then you kind of go from that where John turns into broadcaster with Pat Summerall, and then of course you got the Madden franchise, which, by the way, let me do this real quick, because we are a nerd based podcast. We talk video games sometimes. There are some really good deals on EA based stuff, especially if you have a PS5 and an Xbox. You can go between the two of them and get, like, Madden 25 is like less than $20 on PlayStation. Like, College Football 25 is like $14 on Xbox. If you've got like a PlayStation Plus, you can get UFC 5 basically for free. So anyway, just kind of want to throw that out there as a PSA.
And if you guys put it, if you put in the discount code CrystalBall, you'll get $5 off even more.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or they may charge you $5. Can you
boot
extra.
Him, please?
if it gotta take that long, it's not the same.
It's not the same. One of these days, I'll figure out how to work a soundboard again.
If it takes that long to find it, it's not worth the boo. Okay?
My name is Ray. Anyway, speaking of goofy voices, how hard does Nicolas Cage go into the Madden cadence?
Pretty hard.
How funny would it be if he just talked like Nick Cage?
Well, no matter. That would be hilarious.
Just with Nick Cage.
Boom.
If you wanted to bring in to help him sound like John Madden, you'd bring in Frank Caliendo.
That's fair. That's fair.
Why Frank didn't get a shot?
Well, I mean,
he's not the acting god that Nicolas Cage is.
Like, let's pitch this cast of Frank Caliendo and Christian Bale to the major motion picture studio, and then let's pick.
I've watched worse movies for less reasons.
And that's their whole pitch. They're going to go to the studio and be like, well, Ray Cash will watch it. And it'll be like, oh, shit. Oh, no, well,
Ray's picture
everything's changed.
Ray's picture would be, it could be worse. So
that's a start. You already got $8 million with one Ray Cash.
Hey, but is that not the tagline for like the Raiders history? Could be worse.
It's $8,386,774.
He wrote it down this time. I saw him look at the paper. Well done.
Put it on my phone just for you.
Thank you, sir.
Consistency matters. Probably still was wrong. Who knows? All right. Last story before we take our second commercial break. David Zaslav. That's the story.
I wish I could see the video. He's so stressed.
Okay. So 2 years ago, in their infinite wisdom, Warner Brothers Discovery takes their streaming service, HBO Max, and is like, you know what? We're going to take the most recognizable entity within this streaming service, the famous name of the major pay subscription service cable station that we have, HBO, and we're going to drop it from the name, and people are just going to know. And they did that for 2 years. And then this past week, they're like, you know what? Fuck that. We're going to call it HBO Max again. And, you know, I think David, to have the audacity to put a Twitter post up, thank you for sharing it, Ray, of Idris Elba and the "we're running it back" stuff.
Put the word out that we back up.
Put the word out that we back up.
Yeah.
Like, they want to fail, right? Like, that's what they just want to completely crater this thing. As much, you know what's going to happen? We're going to get the Looney Tunes back on HBO Max. When HBO Max comes back, maybe we'll get all of Bugs Bunny back. Damn it. Spear and Magic Helmet. But come on, what the fuck? Like, what the actual fuck? Anybody, tell me what the fuck.
Oh, like, God.
Tunney's shrugging here. Y'all can't see the video, but Tunney is shrugging.
I mean, is it a response?
I have a migraine.
Is it a response to the critical acclaim of The Last of Us that they're like, you know, we really need to bring back HBO and put that at the beginning? I got nothing. It makes no damn sense to me either. Like, I don't think that's going to make a difference.
So Patrick and I have had this conversation before on show in private. At one point, HBO Max or Max or whatever you want to call it, whatever his mama called him, was your favorite streaming service. You watched it. You found something on a regular basis.
Right.
Pre and post merger. I don't watch that for shit unless a new movie come out or one of my shows is on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Honestly. So
they've taken away so much.
True.
They've taken away so much that really appealed to me with Mac. Like the Warner Brothers thing, like the Looney Tunes cartoons thing was a big one. The Cartoon Network thing. Like Teen Titans Go was like they got rid of episodes of that. They've watered down so much. I used to love the Studio Ghibli thing. I do still I appreciate the Turner Classic Movie Hub, but the DC stuff, like they've rotated out DC stuff. Stuff they touted as being their properties. They've had and got rid of, and it's dumb and whatever. And you know, in the press release, they're like, returning the HBO brand into HBO Max will further drive the service forward and amplify the uniqueness that subscribers can expect from the offering. You should have never gotten rid of it in the first place.
So to that point, well, everything you just said, piggybacking off what I was saying,
right.
I only really watched the HBO shit because I don't subscribe to HBO on cable. I watch it through Max. Right. So like right now, I turn on Max every week for one thing. Dave, what is that one thing?
Is Flash Gordon migrated over to Max? Is that what you're doing?
Oh no, I have the signed copy.
Okay.
Of that physical. Yeah.
It's just this little show called The Last of Us.
That's the only reason I watch it every week. So to that point, maybe they're thinking I can get the goodwill because HBO ain't never been bad. They ain't gone down. People still respect HBO. The thing about it is
there are really good shows. You look at The Penguin. You look at Dune Prophecy. You look at The Last of Us.
Sure, sure, sure.
There's really good shows on that platform, but the rest of it?
But are they HBO shows, Dave?
No.
Because...
No, I'm saying... That's the show called The Rest of Us. That's the Max show, you know, which isn't that popular.
The Rest of Us. Everybody else.
It's just, it's bizarre to me. Like, this is such a, like, the ineptitude of running Warner Brothers Discovery right now is definitely something special. And it's frustrating. And it's like you said, it's not like HBO doesn't have quality programming. I mean, Dave and Tunney and that other guy that does that other cute little podcast that I hear is really good. JD, is that his name? JD? Yeah,
JD. JD.
JD.
JD McNugget.
Who the fuck is JD McNugget?
DJ. They're literally, they're doing a Game of Thrones joke. They're doing a Game of Thrones podcast, you know, doing a revisit of that. So it's not like the HBO doesn't have enduring programming. I know people that go back and have HBO Max and use it to rewatch The Sopranos. The Wire's on there. Like, there's good stuff to watch, and they just keep bungling it, and it's insane to me. So
I'm just going to throw that out.
They have good programming on HBO Max. Some of it is not as good. Tony, you dropped the mic, buddy. What you got?
Who cares about the new, right? I mean, honestly,
I know you don't care.
But I mean it in this way. Like, all the other crap decisions they've made that we just sat and talked about for the last 5 minutes, like, the funny thing is they think, oh, well, if we just bring back HBO, it'll work. Like, that's their whole strategy, and that's a problem.
What you need
to do is get rid of everything but the HBO and have every single thing that comes on start with because everybody knows what the fuck that is. And you need to promote and put your iconic series on these live streams. So like Patrick says, I go in there and, oh, the episode 6 from my favorite season 3 of Buffy's on right now. I'm going to turn it on. Well, if I turn on Max... See, I'm trained already, but if I turn on the HBO app and I see, let's pick something even different. How about the old series with Ted Danson, Zach Galifianakis, and Jason Schwartzman? Wasn't that on HBO? That might have been on a different one. But anyway, you just see your old favorite streaming thing go on, and you know, I don't care about the name, but just keep the old shows on there. Boardwalk Empire is one I've been going back and watching on there, too.
That is a good one. That's a good show. Hold
on. Go ahead.
I'm fuming at this point, so we need to take a second commercial break so I can calm down a little bit. And we're going to talk a little Marvel news, and then we're going to talk about how Christopher Nolan continues to push the medium of cinema forward into the future. That is a very exciting little bit, and then we'll wrap up the show. So stick around. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Welcome back into Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com. We remind you to always use your head. Patrick Dowd, PC Tony, David Ungar, Ray Cash, giving you all the best in the nerdosphere. ProWrestlingTees.com/thechairshot to invest in one of our many awesome designs and help keep us on your internet airwaves. Plus, spend a few dollars more. Like I said, get a soft style. Your giblets will thank you. Gentlemen, my favorite piece of Marvel news this week was yet another casting announcement. But it's not a new casting announcement. It's a return, as it's officially official. Jessica Jones and Kristen Ritter back, going to be in season 2 of Daredevil. Would have been better if she'd walked into that diner when we were talking to everyone. Just saying. But hey, getting it in a news report, works for me. And if Variety's going to share it, then I'm going to believe it. It's not one of those where I can speculate and guess, because Variety is one of those that confirms. That's their job.
I vetted the source before I post.
You called Kristen?
Yeah. She has it? She did. She said, I'm in.
I would call Kristen.
Well, I will call Kristen.
Kristen could call me. Hell yeah. So this is awesome news. This fits so much. You know, we get a return of at least one member of the Defenders. I hope we get more of the Defenders. I hope we start to see more news with, like, Luke Cage coming back. You know, we can do with or without.
Don't do that. Then
what's his nuts?
Don't do that.
Iron Fist.
Don't do that.
Can we get Katie Wayne? Katie Wayne can come back.
Colleen, it's okay. We
no, go I'll right call her Katie. That's her
I think they all should come back. I think Colleen should come back. Colleen Wayne. With all the stuff we've seen, with all the micro, the shit that Tony made, Missy could have a new arm now. Now, that could be even dope. Like, I think they all put it all back.
I do want to clarify. I actually didn't hate Iron Fist the way some people did. Like, it was slow. It was a slow show, but I was fine with Iron Fist.
The story was fine. It's just right. People weren't prepared for the whole white savior thing in 2025, 2020, whatever. The problem was the season one fighting.
We've been
was
doing it forever.
Well, sure, but right. I mean, you know, Marvel wise. But the fighting in season one was abhorrent because he never got a chance to train. That's why season two was much better.
They also let Colleen Wing do all the fighting. But I mean, sorry.
Their bread is buttered.
Colleen Wing was the much more compelling character. That was another problem with Iron Fist, is that the other characters were better characters than Iron Fist. But Jessica Jones was behind Daredevil season one. Season one of Jessica Jones was up there with some of those other Marvel Knights seasons. I love season two of Luke Cage as well. That's one of my favorites. And I hated that was the last season we got, because the cliffhanger that shit ended on was absolutely... Dave, did you watch Luke Cage?
I've been going through those,
Homework assignment.
I know.
Homework assignment.
I'm going through the Defenderverse kind of...
Homework assignment.
But I've been occupied by this little show we talked about earlier. And this other show The Rest of Us.
I've been fine.
I think we got an episode title.
But I also just love Kristen Ritter as an actress. And if there's anybody who I thought most nailed their character out of the sort of what I like to call the Marvel Knights collection over there on the Netflix series, I thought her and Jessica Jones and her work with David Tennant as Purple Man was just top notch and phenomenal. And so I'm excited. And I know Ray is too, and Dave and Tony in particular. He's super excited as well. You down for Kristen Ritter back as Jessica Jones? Did you watch Jessica Jones? No, you missed it. I would know that, but your microphone's up, so I didn't hear you say it. I'm reading lips. I'm a thinker. You're a thinker.
No, I'm saying I know. I didn't have an ad.
No.
No.
How's that differ from any other
conversation? Dynamite drop in there, Monty.
I'm going to put my microphone up.
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway. The hell with it. Major League, that's one I haven't watched in a while. Guys, I should pull that baby out and watch that one. On the air. Yeah. Can't say goddamn on the air.
It's a great
confession.
Movie.
Confession. I actually like Major League 2 and 3 too.
It was okay. I don't know about that.
Two yes.
Well, Patrick and I like 3 because Sam Beckett's in it.
Sam Beckett's in it. I love that they couldn't afford to actually film in a good baseball stadium, so the Metrodome is a green screen. It's pretty bad. Back to the minors. It's Carlos Liston. Anyway, all right, let's move on to a different piece of news. I'm again flipping around the rundown again on you, because I do want to talk about the announcement that happened. We've talked about sort of the impasse that was happening. We've talked about VFX workers many, many times on this show, and just the working conditions that they're put under in many, many blockbuster films. But Marvel in particular had been under a lot of fire with the way that they were being pressured to crank out work for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it very much seems, if you really look at it from the VFX artist side of things, where the MCU and Feige got a little tyrannical in their expectations and things to get done. And that has led and has resulted in VFX artists across Marvel and the Avatar franchise and Disney forming their own unions. And the three worker groups have now overwhelmingly voted to ratify contracts which ensure better conditions for staff working on these respective prospects or projects. I think this is great for a couple of reasons, and I'm going to go to Dave as our resident lawyer. I didn't read in detail all of the language and what these expectations are, but here's the thing that I will tell you, because I am very much a pro-union guy. I believe in that. One of the problems that we have heard in criticisms of Marvel film and Marvel works has been the poor VFX work that I think can at least on some level be attributed to the pressure and speed with which these companies were, or these artists were being directed to put finished product out there. And that results in some less than stellar looking effects. See Hulk, She, amongst others, a good series with some VFX that were dicey in places. And it came out later that part of that is the way that Marvel allocated its resources and the amount of pressure and time they put on the workers to do it. I think this is good for the workers in their own well-being and mental health and just ability to work. I also think this will improve the quality of the films that we see, because these workers will now be in a place where the pressure will be less, because there's going to be rules in place for the studio to ensure that these workers are treated well. And so I think it will be a good thing for Avatar, MCU, and Disney overall.
Yeah, I think like you're saying, it's a situation, it's about balance of power, checks and balances, and just not being taken advantage of. And we know from a lot of the stuff we've talked about in the past that the VFX workers were overworked, they were underpaid, they were, you know, just stretched to the absolute maximum that they could be stretched to. And in your situation like that, and you're not unionized, you are going to get taken advantage of. You're an at-will employee. You have all this stuff. You don't have much protection. You don't have much say-so. And you know, up to a point, it was fine because you didn't see the product suffering. And then, like you said, you saw some stuff with She-Hulk. We've seen some dodgy stuff on some of the Star Wars series as well in a few places. So, you know, you get to the point where it's that law of diminishing returns. You know, you're not getting the same sort of quality out of this thing because these poor guys are just being worked into the ground. So I think it's important to get unionization in there. I tend to be like you, Pat. I'm pro union because it just tends to give you a bit of a stiff arm that you can come back at with management and say, no, we're not going to do that bullshit anymore. Now we've got the power of this union behind us. We'll strike. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And it forces. And when we talked about the writer's strike a year and a half, 2 years ago, we saw how that doesn't go that way unless there's a strong union behind them. So I think from the standpoint of these workers getting a fair shake, getting paid what they're worth, you know, little things that you would think, oh, that's just kind of dumb. How big of a deal is that? But it is a big deal. Lunch breaks, you know. Certain little things like that you just are like, you know, no one's really thinking about these guys need breaks and all this stuff. But I see that like what I do all the time, people fighting about overtime pay or, you know, I didn't get my meal break when I was supposed to. My sick leave wasn't this and that. You don't get any of that stuff without unions. So I think from the standpoint of them, it's hugely important and it probably will transfer to a better product on the screen, which kind of ties into what the other thing you want.
Audrey.
Sorry, I was distracted. I was looking at Tony's pussy. Cat. Sorry.
Wow.
Sorry. Apologize. My bad.
I go on vacation next week. Can you save these? Can you save it for next week?
It'll be bad.
Just give you a taste of what next week is going to be like. So look, I'm glad that Dave broke it down from a very legal perspective. I'll break it down from the regular motherfucker perspective. About time. People deserve to be treated fairly. And you can't make these movies without these people. So, like Dave said in his explanation, little stuff like lunch breaks. The fact that they had to have that put into the damn contract tells you how draconian things probably were. So yeah, good on them. About time. I'm very, very happy for them. And all three of you were right in that the dial back. I thought it was, everything was still quality, but the dial back. And movies and shows and kind of, I guess, focus on things a little bit more long term. Everything been a hit so far since they did that. So now these folk getting paid better. They actually got a chance to take a nap. They actually got a chance to eat a lunch. Take a smoke break. Like, good for them, man. Well deserved.
I think it just benefits everybody, right? Like, maybe short term, the studios have to dish out a little bit more money and wait a little bit longer for turnaround. But we talk about the abundance of, you know, content out there to consume. What's an extra, you know, 3 to 4 to 6 weeks just to make sure you get it right so that the quality's there? Because it only furthers your brand by having a quality product. So bottom line, better work environment for actual human beings.
Right. And I think that's all anybody can ask, right? That's what we want, is we want people to feel comfortable in their workplace. And again, it's going to make better products. So, all right, I flipped this around because I really wanted this to be last after I thought about it. That is it, Tony? I don't know why you were the first person I thought of when I saw this news story. Uh-oh. Because of the immersive film experience that you really look for when you go to a theater, when you talk about like 4X and just what that experience is like at a theater. And you're kind of smiling and laughing, but I mean this genuinely. Like, that is something that you really is appealing to you when you go see a film. And if there's anybody who has really pushed the boundaries of what the movie theater can do, you know, I think of Christopher Nolan. And notably, Christopher Nolan was one of the, you know, there were other directors, but he was one of the directors who really embraced IMAX camera and IMAX filming technology for his movies, and really expanding the immersive experience. He was one of the first Hollywood filmmakers to have scenes from his films expand on IMAX screens. And now he's going to take it to another level with his upcoming 2026 film release of The Odyssey, and that it is being entirely filmed with IMAX film cameras, making it the first Hollywood blockbuster to do so. What's really interesting about this, because it's not unusual, other directors, including Ryan Coogler in Sinners, have used IMAX cameras to film pieces of a film, but never the entire one. And the big thing that, if you look in this story that I shared, the one that I shared was in Gizmodo and IO9, it points out that the camera itself has largely thought to have been too noisy to film anything other than big action set pieces, scenes where there's a lot of other noise going on. Nolan went to IMAX and said, "I want to film an entire movie with your cameras. Make a camera that cuts down on the noise." And IMAX came back with a camera that they said is 30% quieter than what they've ever had before. And Nolan is now moving forward with this. Besides Christopher Nolan, is maybe James Cameron? Are there any other, who else is pushing the envelope of filmmaking the way that this guy does?
Iñárritu.
I mean, you think about it. Who?
Alfonso Iñárritu.
Okay.
For sure. I think if you watch the movies he's done and he's won. I mean, if you watch the intro to The Revenant, the one shot, if you've watched what's the movie about the monster fucking the girl?
Oh, yeah, you're talking about Guillermo del Toro's movie?
You are on fire today.
No, that's really the plot. That's the Shape plot. Of Water.
Shape of Water. They fall in love. Like, I mean,
that's the plot of the movie. She fell in love with the monster and started fucking. That's the movie.
I mean, yes, Oscar-winning film, The Shape of Water. Anyway.
Recently, like Ryan Coogler and Greta Gerwig.
Barbie was big, yeah.
Was kind of like that. I'm trying to think of, Jordan Peele is right up there with what he's doing, in my opinion. I think he's great.
I don't think anything Jordan, from a filmmaking perspective, is groundbreaking. No,
but
I think
it's, like, I want to put him in there.
Writing is a
storytelling kind of perspective.
Yeah, for
the
sure.
The way he portrays that on film, though, is an art in and of itself. It's a little apples to oranges, but I just wanted to mention him. I think it's really cool when anytime you can experience something with that 15 perforation 70 millimeter in IMAX, that's just, you're not seeing anything else but what you're seeing. The immersiveness, you can't beat it. You know, after that, it's 3D. After that, it's Screen X. After that, it's Super Screen Deluxe. After that, you know, you're at the theater. After that, you're at home. So I just, as much as we've tried to recreate this experience at home with, oh, everybody's going to have the curved TV, everybody's going to have the 3D TV and the goggles, everybody's just going to have Meta and watch everything through this thing. No, like, there's a reason movies continue to make a lot of money, because you cannot beat the experience of a full theater and watching something you've been anticipating that's been excellently executed in its buildup as well, right? So it's awesome. It's a great announcement. It's innovation. And Patrick, the other thing you brought up, the noise, it was also the size. The cameras were huge.
Yeah.
They killed two birds with one stone. And I mean, the sky's the limit here. Now we're going to see some really cool things here, I think, down the line.
Chazelle too, by the way, Damien Chazelle's done some really cool stuff visually. La La Land, Cloverfield.
And it's not so much like set pieces and cinematography. It's about the tools of the trade. Because I think of somebody like George Lucas, and the type of innovations that George Lucas came up with in Industrial Light and Magic. Which, by the way, if you guys haven't checked out Light and Magic, season 1 and season 2 on Disney Plus, so it's a really interesting documentary about that special effects company and the technological innovations that they go to. Because like George Lucas was the first one to sort of fully embrace a virtual environment for a film. Now, those films weren't good, but he fully embraced it. I mean, sorry, those Phantom Menace fans out there, I disagree with you. But he fully embraced that virtual environment, that green screen environment. To now, it's almost unheard of for practical sets. I'm getting a lot of hate from half the bandwagon, Dave. The youngins just don't understand.
The kids, just sit your corner.
I also thought of
eat my shorts.
I also look at people like Denis Villeneuve from Canada and his work with Dune. Alfonso Cuarón also doing a lot of great work with just the technology of creating an experience in an atmosphere. And I it's funny with all those names. The two names that first come to my mind, though, are Christopher Nolan and James Cameron. And I think about Terminator 2. Yeah. Avatar at the time was just unbelievably ambitious. And Nolan, it's about finding new ways to just make the picture and the sound bigger than it is. Like, go watch Oppenheimer.
Well, like
it's crazy.
Like Tunney says, where he breaks down kind of the progression of different ways of filming things and just going up that, you know, that ladder of filmmaking and just the theater experience. This is the next evolution of that. And the fact that Christopher Nolan has the clout that IMAX of all people says, okay, you've raised a good point. Let's work with you to do something that's going to push the industry forward. And that's where we're going now. He's going to do this whole thing in IMAX, and it's going to be the next evolution in the theater experience that creates that level of immersion that you're talking about, Tony. And it's just the next step forward in where the theater going experience, the realism, just the different way you're going to perceive it. I think it's going to be big for the industry.
It's going to broaden the horizon of the type of movies that can be implemented into an IMAX theater. Sure. It's going to change. There's going to be a movie that you're like, why is this an IMAX? And then everybody goes and sees it, and you're like, holy shit, they can do that now. Yeah, we don't even know yet. Someone else is going to just, you take it, you turn the middle, you take the middle side and you turn it top wise.
Anytime you get a collaboration between somebody the stature of Nolan and a technology like IMAX, and you push the industry forward, that's a big fucking deal. And that's kind of what we're dealing with.
It's a lot of the driver telling the mechanic what he needs to perform best. And
it's like F1.
It's like beautiful. F1
good analogy. And we keep talking about pushing the technology forward. Let's just take it bare bones. Christopher Nolan, more than any director, is making people actually go to the theater. I still have not watched Oppenheimer because I cannot watch it in a theater-esque situation. So
I have a hard time watching Dune. I have a hard time watching Dune and Dune 2.
We talked about that when it came out.
Possible. Yeah. Denis Villeneuve and his work in there. So yeah, this is big for theaters. The English major in me is looking forward to seeing the Odyssey, or Nolan's version of the Odyssey. Even though I Don't know if I buy Matt Damon as Odysseus. That's not what I saw in my playbook, but Damon is a hell of an actor. So, you know, I'll definitely be giving it a go. All right. That's all we have in terms of news around the Nerdosphere, but that does not mean we are done talking, because we are about to jump into what you're watching this week. Since he's back on the show after a brief hiatus, Ray, did you watch anything while you were gone? What you watching, man?
Well, I want to shout out season finale season. We had a lot of season finales this past few weeks. So, like, the Rookie season finale, a show that I watched that you guys may be familiar with, but the show Power, the Raising Kanan season that finished. Like, a lot of seasons are done for the season. Last of Us, every week you should watch that, and you should watch The Rest of Us and everybody else. All three of the shows are fantastic. But in terms of things that are outside of the scope of that, Untold Shooting Stars, the story of Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenden, is one of the most amazing and crazy stories you'll ever hear. It is so much bigger than Gilbert being stupid and bringing a gun to the arena. And I had no idea. So there's a lot of Untold.
Yeah,
Untold Liver King is out. And then the Brett Favre Untold is next week. So, like,
yeah, I remember sharing with you and you being like, I'm watching that one like right now or something like that. So yep. That was cool. Dave, what you watching, man?
We already talked about it, man. Andor, The Last of Us. That's, I mean, a little bit of three body problem here and there, but really it was mostly about Andor and The Last of Us. And yeah, between those, I'm good. That's all I can say.
Mr. Sonny?
Ray brought up a lot of shows are having their seasons come to an end with the finale episodes. Saturday Night Live did so last night with Scarlett Johansson. Bad Bunny, musical guest. Bad Bunny was in some sketches. It was a really, really good show. If you have Peacock and you're able to go back and watch some of the sketches, it was excellent. Weekend Update is always good because the last show of the year, they write jokes for each other that are totally inappropriate for a white man or a black man to say, and they kind of do that. And
Scarlett got her get back.
Yes, when Michael Che compared Scarlett Johansson's vagina to a roast beef sandwich last year, her and Jost got him back this year. I got to watch the sketches after Weekend Update still, but the sketches before it were so good. It was such a great episode. That and one of the most iconic people on a television series in American television history is leaving the show that they've been on for 15 years. And the season finale of season 16 of Shark Tank was this past Friday. And it was also Mark Cuban's last episode of Shark Tank. Mark Cuban was not on Shark Tank the first season. They brought him in season 2. And in his own words, he never thought there'd be a season 3. And now 16 years later, it's one of the greatest pieces of Americana in television is Shark Tank. And the inspiration and the stories they tell and the interaction they have, and just the way they deal with people and inspire people. So just a brilliant TV show, and shout out to Mark Cuban for making it what it is. It'd probably still be there, but I don't know if it'd be as iconic. So there you have it.
Well, I've been watching all of the Mission Impossible movies because the little O'Dowd showed an interest in seeing the last film in the series, but he didn't want to do it without seeing all the other ones first. So I'm reliving the best and worst of the Michigan Impossible franchise. I too, obviously finished Andor. We just talked about it. I too am watching The Last of Us. Can't get away from that. I am also continuing my journey watching Black Mirror, which I call a journey because sometimes you got to be in the right mental place to watch Black Mirror. Like that show sometimes makes you want to jump off a building a little bit. It can be a downer. It's very, very good, but a lot of it is horribly depressing. Like, it's like if Twilight Zone was always sad. Like, because that's the thing, is Rod Serling had the time and the inclination to occasionally make an uplifting Twilight Zone episode. I've yet to come out of an episode of Black Mirror and be like, that person's going to be okay. It's just not how it works. I'm also, and this is something, Tony, I don't know how much of a reader you are, but if you're an audiobook guy, The newest biography about Lorne Michaels that's been released, I'm reading it right now. It's just simply titled Lorne, is really, really interesting stuff. and is mostly chronicling, it's less about his life and more chronicling his television career, his start as a writer, his efforts to make it both in Canada and the United States. I'm about a third of the way into the book, and I'm now getting into the development and the creation of Saturday Night Live, his relationship with Dick Ebersol, hiring Chevy Chase, his friendship with Lily Tomlin. I had no idea how close they were and how much of a mentor she was to him until he moved on to the show, and her feeling like he betrayed her a little bit by moving on after working for her and writing specials. It's a really interesting book. And for someone who like enjoys Saturday Night Live as much as you do and has followed it, I think it would be an interesting read or listen, depending on what you do when it comes to books and consumption. I think it's worth the time. So worth the check.
I'd probably go the audiobook route. Otherwise, sure. I'd lose 3 days of my life, because when I find a book that I like, read the book when I, I got to go to work. Okay. When I get home, I'm going to turn on. No, I'm going to read the book. I'm hungry. I'm going to eat dinner. No, I'm going to read the book.
This baby's going to travel with me on an Eastern Caribbean cruise. So I'm excited to have it on a pool deck somewhere to do some reading. So
brilliant idea.
All right. We are out of time. I'm going to be gone for the next two shows. But when I come back, everyone, we are going to play a fun game. We've done something similar before in a different realm. But we are bringing back a Bandwagon Nerds draft. This time, though, folks, the nerds, we got to do our homework. We are going to be drafting the greatest years for movies. It'll be a 5-round draft. Each Bandwagon member gets to draft a year and make their case as to why that year is amongst the best in terms of movies released. So stay tuned for that in a couple weeks. The only rule is the release date of the film must be in the year that you select.
Oh,
that's it.
I was hoping that were rules.
No, it's not. It's not a monster truck road rally
or O'Doyle rules. I don't know.
O'Doyle
rules. You'll pay $0 for the seat, but you'll only need the edge. That's how exciting our show will be. All right. Before we get out of here, quick once around, tell everybody where they can find you on the Chair Shot Radio Network. And if you're so inclined, follow you on the socials. This week, we will start with PC Tunney.
Follow me at PC Tunney.
Go ahead and do mine too, bro. You got to do it anyway.
Follow Ray at It's Ray Cash.
There you go. I'm done.
You want to do mine while you're at it?
Follow Dave at Attitude Egg. That's ATTITUDEAGG. And go to attitudeofaggression.com. Follow this show at Bandwagon Nerds. Patrick?
Facebook.com/AdamAgression.
Is that Bandwagon Nerds poll still up and live? I don't know how long it lasted, but I did vote.
Go up to the show. Did you want to? Yeah, go ahead. It was just a little fun poll. I thought we'd throw one out there.
Yeah, no, it was like, how do you prefer to watch your movies or something like that? Or the movie theater, what's your favorite part of the movie theater experience? Or something along those lines, if I'm right. Because I picked popcorn and soda. I love
soda and popcorn dominated.
That's my shit. I love the flavor of cherry Coke and buttered popcorn. It's the weirdest thing.
What's the one thing you need to enjoy a movie at the theater? 3D, comfy seat, less previews, or soda and popcorn? Less previews, doubled up 3D, and comfy seat and soda and popcorn. Soda and popcorn looks like it won by one vote. Dave replied to me, a good movie, and I said if I put that in there, everybody would have just voted for that. So, cool. Look for more polls.
All right. Well, you can follow me on the social medias at Wrestling Realist. That is at WRESTLNGREALIST. You can listen to me every Monday, Tuesday, and occasional Wednesdays here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Mondays, talking nerdy stuff with these guys. Tuesdays, talking sports on the Four Corners podcast. Wednesdays, talking wrestling with Greg DeMarco on the Greg DeMarco Show when he feels like it. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. So make sure you get yourself out of the basement, get some sun, and go watch a movie in the best format possible. This has been Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
We don't all have the luxury of deciding when and where we want to care about something. Suddenly the rebellion is real for you. Some of us live it. I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old. You're not the only one who lost everything. Some of us just decided to do something about it.
You can't talk your way around this.
breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.